Scripture reading this morning will be Ephesians 6, number 13 through 17. Ephesians 6, 13 through 17. Therefore, take up the armor of God, so that you will be able to resist in the evil day, and having done everything, to stand firm. Stand firm, therefore, having girded your loins with truth, and having put on the breastplate of righteousness, and having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace, in addition to all, taking up the shield of faith, with which you will be able to extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one, and take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God.
Good morning, church.
It's good to see everyone here this morning.
I forgot one thing. I broke my watch. I don't have a watch. Ted, you have a watch I could borrow. All right, because I want to quit on time. Where's your Rolex at? I want your Rolex. All right. Okay. Thank you.
I forgot to do that. As I explained to Bible class this morning, I'm kind of a low-tech guy in a high-tech world, but I know how you guys like this. I put some things together for my lesson this morning. I'll do my best in presenting this, and I had Brad come over. By faith, he put everything on in the order I told him to put it on. I haven't viewed it yet, so I hope we're okay. And Brad, he said he would take care of me, and he left me some notes here, so we're following those notes. I think we're going to turn out okay with this, but we'll just have to give it a shot and see. This morning, one of the things I do want to talk about first before we go into our lesson, and that is tomorrow is Veterans Day. And it's kind of really important day to me. We have a lot of members of our church who serve in the armed forces. And the Bible tells us in Romans 13:7 to give honor to whom honor is due. And I think that's very important for us to take time and do that. As Americans, we have been engaged in many wars, and I know that we'll have wars. As long as this world turns, we're going to have wars. And one of the first wars that we engaged in was the Civil War, where there were brothers that fought against brothers for ideas. And I would think what a challenging time that would be for people to live in during that period of time. We had World War I, where many were set off. A lot of our grandfathers served in World War I in the trenches. We had the next war, World War II, and that was a very important war. Many of our fathers served in World War II. We had the Korean conflict. We had the Vietnam conflict, and there are several in here who served in that war. We had Desert Storm, and we had the Gulf War. And I think it's important that we remember those men who went out of their way to serve their country, that we might have the freedoms that we have today. A couple years ago, I'd done a lesson, and we honored all those, if you remember, who were a part of our congregation. And I put the pictures up here of the men of our congregation who had served in some of these conflicts and some of these wars. And what I want to do this morning is to honor one individual. We have two in our congregation that's becoming less and less in numbers all the time. We had Bill Kopiar and Bill Richards, who served in World War II. And Harold, is that right? Three, sorry. Is there any others? I forgot about Harold. I don't want to leave anybody out. Is there any other World War II veterans here? I would like for those two individuals to stand in just a moment and for us to thank them, for us to applaud them. Because when they come home, they didn't have a welcome home party. They didn't have a ticker tape parade. They didn't have a lot of fanfare. They come and they melted back into society, trying to put the pieces back together to the things they had seen and move on their lives. But without men like these and the courage they had, I don't think we would be the people that we are today. Harold and Bill, would you guys stand for just a moment? Let's give these guys a round of applause for serving.
Thank you. Thank you guys very much. And be sure to thank a vet when you see one. When I was growing up, I liked to play Army a lot. My dad was in World War II. And I remember one snapshot that I found in the cedar chest. And I don't remember it being taken of me, but I had an old plastic Army helmet on, and my dad's knapsack, and boots, and my underwear. And that was it. I was just a little kid. But I remember that picture. I have it around home somewhere, and I'm hiding it from my son-in-laws. But I remember talking to my dad about war and about some of the things that he might have seen or might have witnessed. And my dad never talked much about the service, about war. The things I know about my dad was that he was in a battle called the Battle of the Bulge. And that in the Battle of the Bulge, the only information he shared to me was he was a sergeant. There were five guys with him, and the terrain was really steep. And the fog came in, and it was so thick you could cut it, and they got separated, five of them, from the rest of the troops. And I looked up to my daddy, and I said, "Daddy, were you scared?" And he said, "I was scared to death. I was scared to death." And I would have been too. But that's all he would say about the war. After Dad passed away, my mom had a book. And she gave me a book, and I turned in this book because I never read it. And I picked it up last week in preparing for this lesson, and there was a piece of paper in it and a picture that had long been in it. It's this picture that you see right here. And what stuck out was the guy, I can probably point this somehow, the guy with the gun on his shoulder. That's my dad. And he was standing next to one of the generals there. And I began reading the book, and it's part of the book. And what I read was probably things that my dad probably seen that he didn't share with me, that he didn't tell me, and I never told my kids this, or my grandkids. But these are probably some of the things that my dad witnessed when he went into World War II in fighting the Battle of the Bulge. It says, while the fight of Israelam was continued, the 7th Armored Division and our 3rd Battalion of the 395th Infantry was coming in from the north and east and overran a Germany POW camp that was in the town of Hemer. Here, compressed into a small enclosure, were over 23,000 Allied prisoners of war, consisting of some Poles, some Americans, and mostly Russians. They were a starving mass of humanity, cruelly herded into an area that wasn't fit for 1,000 men. It was a horrible sight to see. These men were being squeezed into the limit areas of their open air stockade, digging in the ground with their bare hands, searching and graveling from fighting for grubs and worms to eat. They had gone without food for over a week, and they were dying like DDT'd flies. As our leading troops arrived in the Hemer, the German guards fled, and thousands of these poor, wretched, starved souls broke out of the prison stockade and flooded the countryside in search of food. They ransacked every place they come across, hunting just solely for something to eat. Through interpreters, we were fortunate and able to stop the exodus of the entire camp by assuring groups of them that the food was about to come. And it did arrive in a matter of an hour. And many of those who had broken out came back quickly when they heard the food was available. This incident required, however, the detachment of an entire infantry battalion to be stationed there purely to maintain order and to round up the prisoners who had broken out. In the building sheltering the sickest of these prisoners, they were found three to a bed. Their German guards lived in luxury, two soldiers in a room. How so-called human beings could treat other human beings in such outrageous fashion surpassed all understanding. As we took over and brought them food and medical attention, the Nazi guards who remained were dismayed that we hurled them out of their rooms and placed the fatally sick soldiers in among them. And it's even worse. But those are some of the horrors that go along with war. Some of the hurt that's involved, some of the sights that people treat people in conditions when normally in peaceful times they wouldn't do that. When things are going right, we don't treat one another that way, but yet at wartime, it causes the worst to come out.
and it causes us to do things that we should never and would never do in our story, in our Bible classes. In the adult class, we talked about some of those wars where the Assyrian soldier had surrounded the city of Samaria. And in 2 Kings chapter 6, if you remember, we talked about that God's people were in there. And the tactic was to starve them out. And God's people, who were religious people, good people, but it caused them to do things that they wouldn't normally do. They began to eat things that God said, these were unclean, don't eat of them. But we read where they took a donkey's head, and they would eat the donkey up, and they sold the donkey's head for a high price so they could live, and dove's dung, which was unclean in their religious standards, and yet they would eat that. And then in verse 29, that same chapter 6, they even took their own flesh, their babies, and they began to boil them and eat them just to survive the horrors of war. And I think, what a terrible sight that is. And what causes us to do some of the things that we do and the way we do them? In Leviticus chapter 1, God's people a long time ago were told how to worship Him. And as I've said in Bible class, in every age He's left us the way He wanted to be worshipped. And in Leviticus 1, He told Moses there that if you offer one of your cattle as a burnt offering, it must be a bull that has nothing wrong with it. You must take the animal to the entrance of the meeting tent where the Lord will accept the offering. You must put your hand on the animal's head while it is being killed so the Lord will accept that burnt offering and make it pure. I have a picture. This is one of my beef cows. It's a calf. And I had Doug and Simon over to the farm because they wanted to buy a calf. They wanted a nice bull calf. And Doug brought Simon over. Simon brought Doug. I wasn't sure which way it was, but they come over. And I gave them their choice. I got all the calves in the pen, and I said, Simon, Doug, you guys pick out the calf that you want, because they wanted one that would grow to make a nice bull for their farm down the road. And so I gave them their choice. This is that calf's brother. And it tickled me because Simon's going to be a farmer. I can just tell. He came out in these Carhartt bibs, and he just strolled around in that pen and wasn't afraid of nothing. And I thought, man, how cute. But his mom was real nervous. I could tell that right off the bat. But they let him pick out the calf to take back home with him. And I forgot to tell you, Doug, but the calf that you picked out, they're his grandfather. Come from Montana, and he's a retro calf. I didn't get papers with him, but he does have a good bloodline to him, and he will make you a nice bull calf. But I gave him that choice there. But I want to ask you a question, Doug. Don't be afraid to talk. I want to ask you a question here. If you would have come out to my farm, and I would have brought all my calves in the pen, and there would have been a calf that its head was hanging down, and its ears were drooping, its snot hanging out of its nose, and had diarrhea on the other end, and it was lame, would you have taken that calf home with you? Absolutely not. And that makes sense, he wouldn't. But you know something, church? Somewhere along the line where God gave these instructions that I want the very best. That's why it's called a sacrifice when I give it to God. It's something that meant a lot to me. I want this to come to me. Somewhere between when God gave these instructions and along through the wars of life, God's people forgot that. And we get to Malachi, and the prophet Malachi, through God, gave a very stern warning to those people in chapter 1, verse 8. This is what was going on. This is what caught God's attention. He said, the Lord All-Powerful said this, children, honor your father. Servants, honor your masters. I am your father. So why don't you honor me? I am your master, so why don't you respect me? Your priests don't respect my name. You bring blind animals as sacrifice. And that's wrong. You bring sick and crippled animals for sacrifice. And that is wrong. Try giving those sick animals as a gift to a governor. Would he accept those sick animals? No, he would not accept them. This is what the Lord has said. You smell the food and refuse to eat it. You say it's bad. Then you bring sick, crippled, and hurt animals to me. And you try to give those sick animals to me as a sacrifice. But I will not accept them. This is what the Lord All-Powerful said. You see, somewhere along the line, instead of giving the very best, in the warfare of life,
they got caught up in the things. And it caused them to give the very worst to them. I want you to understand something this morning, church. We're in a war. We're in the biggest spiritual war that you can imagine. Satan is very powerful. He's described in the Bible as the great deceiver, the liar, the prince of darkness, the father of lies. His strength is described as a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. And he's out there. He's fighting us. And just because he's invisible doesn't mean the war is going on. In fact, we are fighting, Paul said, against the principalities, the invisible principalities. We're fighting against this war. And they're striving for the mastery of our soul. And in this war that we're fighting on a day-to-day basis, and as a group of people and as an individual, sometimes in the battle of war, it causes us, just like I read the story that was my dad's eyes had seen, it causes us as people to do things that normally good people just don't do. We don't act that way. We don't think that way. But yet in the war, we get caught up and it does. Jesus and God throughout the Bible in different occasions had this saying, he that hath eyes, let him see. He that hath ears, let him hear. And sometimes he would say, you have eyes, but you can't see. You have ears, but you can hear. And I always remember the story of Tao when he was being corrected, I think, by his mother one time. And she had to correct him two or three times. And I asked little Aubrey what was going on. And Aubrey looked up at my little brown eyes and says, Pap, that boy just don't get it. That's us sometimes. We just don't get it. That's why we have eyes and we don't understand. We have ears and we don't hear. I want us to understand. I want us to see. I want us to hear. I want us to understand this morning that we are in that war. Satan is really wanting our souls in the worst way. And these wars that we get caught up in has caused us in days gone by to do things that we should not be engaged in or we should not do. The spiritual warfare that we're caught up in Ephesians that Jim read to us. In the sixth chapter, in the beginning part of it there, it's in verses 10 and 11. It says, or before that, to my end I will write you to be strong in the Lord and His great power. Wear the full armor of God. Wear God's armor so that you can fight against the devil's clever tricks. Our fight is not against people on this earth. We are fighting against the rulers, the authorities, and the principalities of the world's darkness. We are fighting against the spiritual powers of evil in heavenly places. I know who's causing the war, but it's causing us to do things that we shouldn't sometimes. In the past couple months, and even before that, as one of your shepherds, and I know Skip and Denny has went through the same thing, I received a tremendous amount of emails, phone calls, personal visits, and questions about forgiveness. Statements like, I think I have forgiven, but I can't quit thinking about it. Or, I forgive, but I can't stand the sight of that individual. I don't want to see that individual. Or, even worse, one of the emails I got was, I can never, ever forgive. That's Satan at his best in his warfare with good people, causing us to say and do and think in the manner of which we do. And that hurts us. God always has instructed things for us for our benefit. And one of those areas is in forgiveness. Forgiveness helps whom we're supposed to forgive, there's no question about it. But the reason God said, unless you're willing to forgive, I won't forgive you, he's trying to get a point across that I need to be willing to do that for my own sake, for my own sanctity, for my own mind. One of the things that I come across in preparing for this lesson was a study that came out just recently. I want to read it to you here. It says that most research has examined the benefits of forgiveness, including the series by studies of American Psychological Association, which found it improves physical and mental health and restores a victim's sense of personal power. One of the studies is in the series looked at the idea of people forgiving the perpetrators of September 11 attacks. just 3 to 4 weeks after the event and found that it was not only possible, but part of a package and very helpful. Jeannie Burnett, an associate professor of psychology at the University of Richmond, has co-authored various studies on forgiveness. She tells us that it has been found to have remarkable physical healing powers. In the aftermath of transgression, forgiveness can protect health, physical health, by reducing stress and rumination. For example, forgiveness is associated with lower blood pressure as well as lower heart rates. She notes additionally, forgiveness of severe offenses has been linked to reduced anxiety and depressive symptoms. In these psychological relievers that motivate most people, after a while, the helplessness of being angry at something that can change becomes overwhelming, and it's a destructive experience, he says. I think that they get so tired of being battered by their own reactions that they say, I just have to let it go. A long time before these studies were put together, my Lord knew what was best for me. And I'm not standing here in front of you saying I've got it all together, that I'm perfect, because I don't. I struggle. I'm a man. I met the qualifications in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and Titus 1 to be your leader. But that doesn't mean I don't struggle as well, because I do. And I have my own personal battles and personal struggles. And sometimes it's with this area of forgiveness. And sometimes it's hard to forgive. But I know in the deep part of what God wants me to do, of me being a Christian, is that it's important for me to learn how to forgive. Because if I don't, it's going to hurt me more in the end. Paul said, let no root of bitterness grow up. And when I get that root of bitterness growing up in me, I'm not Rob Miller that I want to be. Emotionally, I get down, I get angry, I get frustrated. I don't like that. I want to be joyful. I want to be happy. I want to let go, and I need to do that. God knows what's best for me, and that's why I said, you need to be willing to forgive and let loose and move on. Is it easy? No. Absolutely, it's not. And I've got some help here in just a minute. But I think one of the hardest things, when we struggle with different areas of forgiveness, sometimes there are spouses who have cheated on spouses, and they come back and ask forgiveness. Sometimes there are spouses who have been abused physically and emotionally and mentally and have asked for forgiveness. And my advice to people is this, that unless somebody truly repents, I would never ask somebody to go back in that relationship if they're being abused. That repentance that God demands out of all of us. And if someone repents and asks for us for our forgiveness, I think we need to forgive for our own sake as well as theirs. And again, that's a very hard thing to do. One of the things that we have put on our teachers in all the areas here is three things that are challenging that you need to know about. One is we've asked them to take up core curriculum. And that is, there are studies that they have to study that are going to be common throughout the United States. And the government holds this federal string attached to it, the carrot, that there's money here as long as everybody's teaching this. And so we have to teach it. And that's a challenge for our teachers to adapt to that and teach those ways. The other is a thing that you might read about in Ohio. It's called OTES. And we're asking our teachers to be evaluated. And I'm not against evaluations. Evaluations are good. But part of this evaluation I really have a struggle with. That is, they take a kid and they'll test him coming into their grade, and then they test him partway through the year, and then they test him at the end. And part of their evaluation depends on the progression of that student. And I've got a little struggle with that, because we take coal miners and we pay you good to mine coal, but we don't evaluate that BTU that comes out of that coal and say you're going to get paid for that BTU. And so why are we treating our teachers in that manner? It's a little unfair. I'm not against evaluations. But the third thing is something that where I'm going with this. And now we've got to protect your kids. When I went to school, my mom never worried about me coming home safe or being shot at school or being kidnapped. That never crossed my mom and dad's mind. But now when we send our kids to school, it's on our hearts, it's on our minds. And we have to send our teachers and our staff to training. We have now a thing called ALICE training. And a couple weeks ago, my wife went to an in-depth 2-day class for this so that she could be certified, help teach other people. And they shot her with this, with a rubber pellet. They enacted things, and she's got a place on her leg, because one of the things that they do in schools now is they used to lock you down. Well, they don't want to be locked down now. They want you to be able to flee, because studies have showed that there's more safety that way. But they shot her with this rubber pellet, and it left a mark on her leg. And I got to think, what if my wife went to work one day? Or what if your kid or my grandkid went to school and didn't come back? What if they were shot and killed? That individual later become a Christian and come to me and said, would you forgive me? Could I do that? Could I have the heart to do what God has said I must do in order to be pleasing to Him? Could I forgive? That's challenging. That's hard. I know it can be done because there have individuals who have done it in the past. And it's an individual struggle that we all struggle with, and the manner in which we struggle and go through this makes a world of difference. So it's something that we all have to work on, and it may not occur overnight, but it has to be a work in progress. We have to show signs that we're willing to do this, and whatever it takes for us to forgive and move on in all circumstances, we must be willing to do that, because if not, we get to the place where the email that I received is, I cannot forgive you, and I know where our souls stand in jeopardy when that gets in my heart and I just can't forgive. My soul's in danger. And my blood pressure and my health and everything else, that God knows what's best for me. So it's something that we really must work on. Now, Jesus gave us a great help, something that I have relied on often in all circumstances because I've found it to be very, very beneficial to us. Is this clock right? I'm going to wrap it up real quick because I got a real serious announcement. Remember when Jesus was tempted in all ways? Remember when he went up and Satan come at him, threw everything at him, he was hungry, he was down. What did Jesus say? He turned and he said, it is written. Three times I read Matthew where Jesus said, it is written. It is written. For me to help learn forgiveness or any other problem that I'm struggling with in life, I'm no better than Jesus, and I can turn to the Bible and say, it's written. This is what God wants me to do. This is how he wants me to live and find out how to do that. I could spend more time in that, but if this clock's right, I need to quit. We're turning a new chapter in this congregation. We're leaving one chapter, we're entering another. We're going to get a full-time minister. And that takes a lot of work from all of us. That's why the congregational meeting tonight is so important. We're going to be listening, as Denny announced, to a fellow Jeffrey Dillinger next week as one of the possible candidates for that full-time position. And times have changed. People don't move like they used to. When I was young, preachers moved all the time, and I kept hoping, like Ted did, when a new preacher came in, he'd have pretty daughters. But that's not the case. Preachers stay forever now, and that's a good thing. They need to live among us and be among us. That's a good thing. So it's a marriage is how we elders are looking at it. We want to marry the right person that stands up here and directs our thoughts towards God. We need your input in this process. Please be back tonight. Tim's going to bring a lesson tonight, and I know he'll do a great job. And there's one final picture that I'm going to share with you as I wrap this up, if I can hit the right button, and it's just died on me. There it is. Oops, back, sorry. There. This is a picture that was out our front window. I love my farm. I really do. Oh, you know that. But it was the sunset's radiant glow the other night. And I sung, it reminded me of a song that we used to sing, Ted, a long time ago in Carolina Church, Beyond the Sunset's Radiant Glow. There is a brighter world, I know. That place where there's no more wars, where there's no more battles, where there's no more fighting for my soul. Jesus paid that price. And if I can learn to walk the walk that Jesus told me to walk, if I can learn to forgive, if I can learn to act like a Christian, if I can learn all the challenges and walk that life now, my home beyond this sunset's radiant glow is going to be a brighter home, I know. I want us to think about that hymn. Kevin's going to lead us in a hymn. It's not this hymn, but if you have needs, if you've been having struggles, if you have challenges and you just want us to pray for you, we'll do that now. If you want to become one of his children, see, here's water. What does hinder you from being baptized? There's nothing. It's that important to us. We will take the time to do whatever's necessary. Will you not come, whatever response is, as together we stand and sing the